everybody. Hi, welcome in. It's the latest edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
I think it's the most professional we've ever started an episode of this show.
Yeah, we're not just like, oh, God, you again.
I don't know why I just did that. It's very strange.
No, it was. You just kind of want to be professional for once in your life. That's nice.
Once in my
life.
That's nice. It's a rare thing for me. Hey, it's episode number 95 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, which means that it is the same number as the Rockies' year of their first postseason appearance, 1995. Colorado Rockies got a wild card berth in the first year of the American and National League wild cards and promptly lost to the eventual World Series champion Atlanta Braves. But, you know, it was cool. It was fun. It was a good team.
Yeah, it was okay. Yeah,
it was a fun team.
Yeah.
You know, it worked out. Yeah. They went to the playoffs, and they were the fastest team in Major League history at the time to make a playoff berth. And, yeah, granted, it was an expanded postseason format, but you kind of thought to yourself, like, this team's going to be in the playoffs all the time. And then it didn't happen for another 12 years.
They got the guys to hit the home runs. They got the guys to somehow keep the ball in the ballpark.
They're
going to
do this always.
Every single year, this is going to happen.
Yep. Yeah, not really the case. So that's
what the Rockies need is another labor stoppage, clearly, because it was after 94.
They came back fresh.
Shortened season, yeah.
They came back fresh after the shortened season.
Well, you know, they would have had another postseason appearance in 2010 if there would have been a shortened season as well. If they would have just cut off September, they would have been
in
the playoffs.
That is true, yeah. If they would have been, and they would have been one of the best teams in baseball.
Yeah, you know, either the Rockies need to go 163 games or like 126 games. And if they have those
nothing
kind of seasons, they'll make the playoffs.
Nothing in between.
Yeah.
Let's pitch that. Let's see if Rob Manfred's up for that. Rob, you want to shorten games. Why not just shorten the whole season? Get the Rockies into the playoffs a little more often. What do you think? What do you think, buddy?
I don't know. What do you think about using tacky baseballs?
Oh, Lord. So
I'm under the impression Rob Manfred doesn't really like baseball that much.
Yeah, it's very strange, right? We actually didn't even discuss this last week, but Major League Baseball agreeing to a rule with the Players Association, you will no longer have to throw four intentional balls for an intentional walk. You'll now just point to first base, and a guy will take his intentional free pass. Somebody I saw termed this on Twitter as a solution in search of a problem. Basically, Major League Baseball averaged one intentional walk last year, like once every 2.5 games. Like, it just doesn't occur that often.
And it also, it doesn't take
that
long to do.
I don't get it.
I think they're overreacting because of what Pedro Baez did last postseason when everybody was watching.
Right.
And his half innings went on for 34 minutes.
And none of that was due to intentional walks. It was due to Pedro Baez being Pedro Baez.
Exactly.
I don't know. You want to shorten games, cut down between inning breaks, but they'll never do that because it'll cost advertising revenue. That's what takes up the most time.
Or and just enforce the rules on the books.
Yeah, you could do that too.
I mean, hey.
I don't know. Baseball's fine the way it is. The average game time actually ticked up in 2016 versus 2015, but, you know, I'm not complaining.
Hey, there are more home runs.
And I also don't think that you're just raking in new millennial fans because a game is going to, on average, go 2 hours and 53 minutes instead of 3 hours and 1 minute. You know what I mean?
Or even that. Like, just the intentional walk then will cut off maybe, like, 40 seconds per game, maybe?
Once
like,
every
I,
two
I don't
games.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
so,
very weird.
Whatever.
It's very strange.
Whatever.
I don't know, but here we are. We are now a week plus into spring training games. And we are just about a month away from opening day across Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball. Actually, Minor League Baseball is an opening a week from – or a month from today. April 6th is the Minor League opener, so that's something. And here we are, Colorado Rockies with some news. you wanted to be excited about things, and this is a very early.
Well,
this is why we can't have nice things.
2017 season, the Rockies are and the fans are their most optimistic they have been in nearly a decade. Go ahead, Tyler.
Don't worry, we'll temper that for you. Very, very quickly. This from our good buddies at Purple Row. Quote, Colorado Rockies outfielder David Dahl should return to baseball activities before the end of spring training and maybe even see in-game action before opening day, according to a report by Patrick Saunders. The latest news should be considered good after the last update had people worried that he might not participate at all for the rest of spring training. Dahl has missed most of the Rockies Cactus League slate after being a late scratch on February 27th. Expected to miss only a few games at first. Dahl sat out the remainder of last week's games before Bud Black revealed Friday that the lefty-swinging 22-year-old could miss a considerable amount of time. David Dahl has been announced with a stress reaction to the sixth rib. According to the Rockies, that came down not even an hour ago. We're recording this on Monday afternoon. He'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks. It is, according to Purple Row, it is, quote, not a true back injury and is not muscle related. So that would seem to be a good sign. But we were talking before we went on. This is like an every other year thing that David Dahl has to contend with.
Yeah, this will be his sixth professional season, and it's kind of like the Giants with their even-year BS. Right now, David Dahl has the odd-year BS. He was healthy in 2012, 2014, and 2016, and he's had, at least at this point, a massive injury in 2013, 2015, and 2017, at least starting right now, which has caused him to miss significant chunks of time. And that's not something that you want to have when you're about to start your first full season in the big leagues. And David Dahl, he was being counted on to be, if not the starting left fielder, a guy that was going to be counted on for 500 to 600 at-bats this season, get a really good solid base at the big league level, because we saw what he did last year, putting up the ridiculous numbers that he did in 63 games, hitting over 300 with some pop. He had some stolen bases as well. He's the real deal, but at some point, this starts to become a trend for David Dahl, and not one that's going in the right direction. So,
and not one that he can control either.
No, it's like he leads the league in injuries that you go, what? How? Really? That's what David Dahl is right now. The spleen, the blown up hamstring, like his hamstring exploded like a gun in a cartoon where you fire it and like the white flag goes out and it says bang on it, like written on the white flag. That's what David Dahl's hamstring did back in 2013. So he leads the league in those kind of injuries that, yeah, it's not really anything you can train for or try to protect, I guess. But, man, it seems like every other year we go through this with David Dahl and we wonder if he's ever going to come back from it. And he always does, and he's always better whenever he comes back. So the silver lining is that if anybody knows how to deal with injuries, knows how to come back from them, at this point it's David Dahl.
And, you know, it would seem to suggest, as Purple Row noted, it's not a – quote-unquote significant injury in the way that his last ones were. You know, he lost a spleen 2 years ago, and the hamstring was torn, and it was a pretty severe hamstring tear back in 2013. This would seem to be something that, with rest and with rehab, could get him back on the field relatively quickly. But for the Rockies, this is, you know, one of the guys that you were relying on being a mainstay in the lineup. And his talent level, his ceiling is so good. He is already, even a guy who doesn't have a full major league season under his belt, he is already better than the other options that could fill the spot in his lineup, because his spot in the lineup, I should say. The guys behind him are Gerardo Parra. There's no B's in his name for a reason, because he doesn't take balls and he can't get walks. And I guess Ian Desmond maybe fits into this conversation now, but let's talk about that, because the conversation now seems to have shifted from how long is David Dahl going to be out to, by opening day, if David Dahl is not around, what is the best case scenario for the Rockies lineup-wise? I'm going to give you my thoughts really quick, and then I want to hear your thoughts.
Sure.
I don't want to see Ian Desmond in the outfield. If your plan is 100% Ian Desmond at first base, I don't think the Rockies are well served to have him miss game action at first base and just put him back in the outfield. I don't think that works. I think the Rockies are so committed to this first base thing, you got to ride that out. And yeah, you have Mark Reynolds as an option. Mark Reynolds was very good for the Rockies last year, but you're paying Ian Desmond a pretty decent amount of money to be your first baseman. I don't see the logic in taking away the developmental time and the work that he would get getting acclimated to first base and putting him behind the eight ball for mid-April or May when he eventually does have to go to first base. Then all of a sudden he's missed out on, what, 6 weeks of game reps?
Yeah.
I don't like that idea. And we saw a lot of people on Twitter talking, you know, put Desmond back in the outfield, work with Mark Reynolds at first base, something like that. And then you've got an option of having Gerardo Parra off the bench. But I think the Rockies are still better served to have Ian Desmond at first base. And yes, maybe that does mean that Gerardo Parra is your outfielder in that third spot. And, you know, I don't think anybody is super pumped about that. But I think that ultimately long-term is a better solution, because it'll get Ian Desmond more quality time where he is going to be long-term for the Rockies.
Well, Gerardo Parra is also a guy that they're paying a considerable
right.
amount of money
exactly.
to. So,
and that's a fair point.
Right. So that's probably got to come into play a little bit. But at the very, very least, at some point, if you really needed to, you could kind of platoon Reynolds, put him in against lefties, shift Desmond to the outfield, put Parra on the bench in those cases. But no, I think you're absolutely right. Unless this first base experiment for Ian Desmond is an abject disaster over the next 3 weeks, I don't see a possibility where the Rockies would yo-yo him between first base and the outfield again. Because really, you did commit it. You want that to be the situation. You have a lot of outfielders already. You don't necessarily need to be throwing Ian Desmond back there. I know they do like his versatility. I know that. But
yeah. And that's
that
fine.
That seems more like not a panic move necessarily, but seems more like a last resort if you wanted to put Ian Desmond back out there and yo-yo him between that and first base. The guy we're not talking about right now is Raymel Tapia.
Yep.
Raymel Tapia, he got some experience last year, albeit just a handful of at-bats at the big league level. But if he is potentially going to be that guy who's going to maybe back up Gerardo Parra, if he's going to get that 25th spot on the roster, if David Dahl is not ready, then that might be the case. And if they deem him ready, then that's great. Or Jordan Patterson, if he has a nice spring,
yeah.
who knows? He
yep.
might get that shot as well. They want to keep Tapia getting consistent at-bats every single day. They might bring a guy like Patterson up without – you know, a guy who doesn't have as high of a minor league pedigree as Raymel Tapia. They may bring Patterson up, make him that guy off the bench, and keep him as the fourth to fifth outfielder, however you want to divvy up the roster. But yeah, I think having Mark Reynolds there, even on a minor league contract, I think it's almost a lock to say that he's going to start the year with the team, just considering the history we have right now and the fact that behind Ian Desmond, who's not a first baseman, they don't have really another first baseman on the roster. I mean, imagine Steven Cardullo is going to be in AAA, but he's not necessarily an answer, I don't think. So, yeah, I think it opens up the door right now for two guys, and that's Jordan Patterson and Raymel Tapia. I think those two guys are going to be battling it out over the next 3 weeks for that spot on the outfield, for the backup outfield spot, if David Dahl is not ready. Now, they said there is a possibility he could be back before spring training, but if he only gets a week's worth of games before the opening day, I'm not sure if they want to push that to make sure he's going to be on the opening day roster and starting every day from opening day. So there's a lot going on and a lot of moving parts here, but that's why it's only March 6th. We still have plenty of time left in spring training. Maybe some of these pieces will fall where they may by the time April rolls around.
You know, I mean, it's the Colorado Rockies. They might just put Alexi Amarista out there. Who knows? At this stage, like we don't really know. Maybe Christian Adamas becomes your new outfielder.
Chris D'Onofrio could make the roster.
No, I mean, I think we're in agreement. I don't think it's worth sacrificing the time and the workload for Ian Desmond at first base in order to put him back in the outfield. I think the Rockies would probably be best served if somebody like Raymel Tapia or Jordan Patterson won that job. I don't really see that happening unless there's just one of them just blows up and the bottom continues to fall out of Gerardo Parra.
Who's had a nice spring, by the way, so far.
Yeah, his spring's been fine.
Had a home run today.
You know, I don't think that there is enough there right now to suggest, even if they're missing David Dahl on opening day, all indications right now are that at the latest, you would expect him back by mid-April. So that's 2 weeks to start the season. And I don't think the Rockies are going to make some big sea change in the lineup, put Ian Desmond in the outfield, put Mark Reynolds at first base, whatever it is, in order to fill a void for 2 weeks. I just don't really see that. I don't see that happening. So I think Parr is going to be the guy.
I think he has to be at this point, considering what you're paying him. You know, I was under the impression or having a terrible gut feeling that no matter what, Gerardo Parra would have been the starting left fielder on opening day anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, now that may not matter. But I was really, really having that feeling, that bad feeling in the pit of your stomach that just kind of just gets bigger and bigger, like a cancerous growth, and then just kind of overtakes your entire body.
Gerardo Parra.
Gerardo Parra was still going to be around and be the starting left fielder on opening day.
You know,
because we saw so many good things from David Dahl last year that it's just, of course it happens like this. In the early in spring training, something goes wrong, and now I have to deal with the consequences.
You know, Parra, spring training stats are spring training stats, but one thing you can take a little bit of an indication of future growth from, or I guess past and present growth from in spring training, is pitch judgment and selectivity. And Gerardo Parra so far in the spring Yeah, it's just through 14 ABs, 17 plate appearances, but he's walked three times. He's only struck out twice. It doesn't say a lot. It's a very small sample size, but at least it's not that he struck out seven times and he's walked zero.
Well, maybe it was, you know, beaten into his brain over the offseason that, hey, maybe you
need
to
get better.
Literally one walk, like take right. like a walk, you know,
maybe at some point. So that is the that's the big news. The Rockies, as of right now, unsure as to what the exact timetable will be for David Dahl. I think also we have grown to know over the last few years that the Breidich administration is pretty tight-lipped about things. So yes. Even if this is less serious than what these reports are currently saying, I'm okay with a team doctor or team medical staff being overly cautious with somebody like David Dahl. If he really only needs a week of rest and they're going to give him 2-3 weeks of rest, man, if he's healthy on opening day, I'm all for that.
Fine. Yeah.
I'm all for that. So, we'll see if he's, we'll see who's out there. Your starting left fielder, Gerardo Parra, to lead the Rockies into battle in 2017. That's the big news item of the day from your Colorado Rockies. One other big news item of the day for your Colorado Rockies from David Adler at MLB.com. Quote, Israel had already left the bases loaded twice against Korea in a 1-1 game when Scott Burcham stepped to the plate with runners on the corners and two outs in the top of the 10th inning of the World Baseball Classic opener on Monday. Burcham had been victimized the second time he struck out against Cardinals closer Seung-Hwan Ho with the bases loaded to end the eighth. But in extra innings, he came through. Burcham slashed the go-ahead hit, an infield single off of Chang-Yong Lim. They gave Israel a 2-1 win over the Pool A hosts at the Gochuk Sky Dome in Seoul. Scott Burcham is a Colorado Rockies minor leaguer who came through in a huge spot for the upstart squad from Israel. There aren't a lot of native-born Israeli players on that team. They're mostly American-born players with Jewish ancestry or with relatives who emigrated from Israel and came over here. But a pretty cool story that team busts out of the gate with a win. It's a Rockies guy to do it. But it brings us to a larger overarching topic, which is the World Baseball Classic. Now, Anthony and I will admit right out of the gate we're overly biased. We're going to be going to the World Baseball Classic together in 2 weeks. But there have been the requisite stories this year. By the way, last year for Scott Burcham, he spent his time with the Asheville Tourists, 61 games. He batted .271, .335, .382 overall with a couple of homers and 22 driven in. He was a 25th round pick out of Sacramento State back in 2015. But, you know, this week has brought the standard stories, the World Baseball Classic, everybody hates it, blah, blah, blah. Noah Syndergaard was asked by a reporter, does any part of you wish you could be there at the WBC? He responded, nope, not one bit. The reporter said, why? He said, because I'm a Met and ain't nobody made it to the Hall of Fame or win the World Series playing in the WBC. I get it. I understand Major League players' reluctance to embrace the WBC. That's also the reason why the U.S. has not finished higher than fourth.
Yes.
In the WBC and is 10-10 all time in WBC play. So I understand both sides of it, but the reason why USA Baseball struggles to put together a competitive roster, and that being said, this is by far the best roster the USA Baseball has put together, and they will open the tournament coming up on Thursday in Miami. But, you know, I mean, that's the prevailing theme among the anti-WBC crowd is it's manufactured, it doesn't do anything for anybody. If anything, it just risks injury and whatever. But for every other country that's in this tournament, especially the Latin American countries and the Asian countries, this is a huge deal. This is the rich man's baseball in the Olympics because you have major league stars playing. So I understand the negativity, but I love it. I love the WBC.
And I wonder why the disconnect is there for the Americans who are kind of reluctant to accept the fact that the WBC is such a big deal for all those other countries. It doesn't really make sense. I mean, I get the fact that, you know, you're being paid by your major league club, and that's the whole point. That's the people that sign your paychecks. You're going to want to make them happy first and foremost. You don't want to risk an injury. You're not really ramped up yet the way to pitch in a ultra competitive game. I understand, but there are these fail safes in place. There are pitch limits. There's, you know, the pitchers can't overextend themselves whatsoever over the course of a day, 2 days, 3 days, whatever it is. I don't know why everybody else on the other country seems to be so gung-ho about it, and Americans are just like, well, you know, if I have time, I'll participate.
Yeah. And it's so weird to me. Yeah. Like, nobody acts that ambivalent or that anti-competition when it comes to basketball in the Olympics, when it comes to the World Cup, even the Hockey World Cup or USA Hockey in the Olympics, people get behind. I don't understand the ambivalence or the antagonism toward the WBC. I really don't get it.
No, and it's such a fun tournament too. Every single time, every single incarnation of this tournament
has been fantastic.
Even though the U.S. hasn't been there, there's so much passion, so much fanfare with all the teams and the players involved with the other countries. It makes it so interesting. And you know, yeah, it's manufactured, sure, but every single major international tournament had to start somewhere. I'm sure in 96 BC there were some Athenians who were like, I don't know, this international competition of the Olympics seems
to be I'm not really into the Olympics. What are they, running marathons? It's stupid. What a waste of time.
Listen, like, I'm from Athens. I don't need to take on Carthage anymore. You know, I don't need to see what Carthage is doing.
They're screwing themselves up for my team's marathon season. I don't need that nonsense. Ridiculous. Yeah, man, I don't get it.
Never mind. Let's get naked and oiled up and just go, you know, hang out with each other and just go wrestle and stuff.
I don't get it. Like, I just really, I don't understand the, I get the player's perspective of it. And with baseball, there's no perfect solution to it. One of the things that's been the complaint about the WBC, I think the thing that's been the complaint about the WBC is timing. Baseball would be better served to make the WBC an extended All-Star break event. I think that'd be fantastic. I think
if you
did what hockey does during the season in an Olympic year and you took 7 days or 10 days and made a tournament format out of that, I think that'd be great, because then you eliminate all of the discussion of, oh, these guys are playing in competitive games before they're in game shape because it's spring training, it's February, it's March, it's whatever. I think if you eliminated that and you had it in season, that'd be terrific. But as we have obviously seen, you can't move those mountains a lot of times when it comes to baseball players who are the most cliche creatures of habit, quote unquote, when it comes to their preparation, their routine and season, etc. I think that'd be great. I understand the complaints about in spring training, guys are not necessarily at their same elite level of what they would be in the season. I think to suggest that you could do it after a season is a little bit short-sighted, because even if you do it after the World Series, that means that the vast majority of guys who are playing in it will have been sitting out over a month. So you go off of that cliff, you know, the adrenaline dies down to the end of a season, then you got to ramp back up a month later to play in a competitive tournament. There is no perfect time for the WBC. But where it is right now, having attended all of them to this point, this is an awesome event, and it just strikes me as so strange that people don't get behind it, but they'll get behind USA Soccer. They'll get behind USA Hockey, USA Basketball. It's so bizarre to me.
To be fair, it took a while for US Soccer to really catch on the way it is now, and it's really only getting bigger. So even 20 years ago, people didn't care. So when the first WBC was, what, 06?
06.
In 2006, people didn't care about US Soccer as much as they do right now. But I think it's got to get to that point. And I think a lot of people who complain about the WBC saying these guys aren't in game shape are the same people that, when at the same time people come to spring training, they go, wow, he looks like he's ready to play, because there's really no offseason for these guys anymore.
Right.
There's no offseason.
This isn't like Willie Mays going home and working three other jobs and then coming back. That's what spring training used to be. This isn't guys going back being, you know, working as mechanics or substitute teachers or as grave diggers as they used to be. Guys, there is no offseason for these guys.
Yeah. This isn't Richie Hebner driving a hearse in the offseason,
right,
working as a grave digger. No, this is what the players do in the offseason. They maybe take a month off, and then they start ramping up their workouts just like they were during the season, or, you know, getting ready for game shape. Like, they come into spring training. They're not coming into spring training to get in shape. They are already in shape. Now, game shape, obviously not. There's nothing that really they can do short of playing winter ball or something along those lines. But at the same time, guys don't mind playing winter ball that much. People seem to want to play winter ball more often than not. And then to come here and say that the World Baseball Classic for playing for your country is a little bit too much and manufactured, I'm not sure that argument lines up.
And I think, you know, your point is very astute in that, yeah, it's manufactured. So is every other tournament ever conceived.
Yeah.
Like, they all have to start somewhere. And I just think the quality of play, the U.S. has to have a breakthrough year. And yes. that, I think, is what will eventually draw people in, is you have to, you know, U.S. soccer had the run in, when was it, 2004, when they finally made it to the quarters, or whatever year it was, where they finally, 2002. Yeah. And so you have a team that people can get behind because they see progress. The U.S. needs that. In 2013, USA Baseball trotted out a roster that included guys like Willie Bloomquist, Steve Cishek, who was actually pretty effective, but is not like you wouldn't think of as, oh, let's put this guy on a frontline American roster. Vinny Pistano, Glenn Perkins was on that team. Again, a good player, but not an all-world national team type of guy. Ryan Vogelsong, back when he was still good, although he blamed a bad 2013 regular season on having pitched in the WBC. So there were just a lot of rosters that the Americans have run out there that just haven't been that good. And what this is also kind of a common theme in baseball for the United States at the international level. For being the country that invented the game, presumably, although there's evidence, maybe it was in England.
Yeah.
For being the country that embraced it as your national pastime and that turned it into the Goliath that it is now, the U.S. has never really given a shit about international baseball. USA Baseball mostly serves as a developmental tool for amateur players, but even on the major stages, the U.S. has never really put in the same effort or drawn in the same caliber of talent that countries like Korea and Japan and Cuba and the Dominican Republic. Even the Netherlands draws in its top players from, you know, obviously not necessarily all of them from the actual homeland in Europe, but guys from the islands who have played growing up, you know, the Jonathan Scopes of the world. Didi Gregorius is a guy who actually grew up in the Netherlands at home, is from Amsterdam. But those guys who got a lot of playing time in those ranks growing up for national teams, they stick with that program. And that's one of the things that I think is really cool, is you see guys like Chris Archer, who played for teams when he was younger, who are really behind it now and are excited to be able to throw that jersey on again. But it's always been that way for USA Baseball. In the 2000 Olympic Games were the only time the U.S. won a gold in Olympic baseball since it was a sport, a medal sport, not just a demonstration sport.
Yeah, fighting Ben Sheets.
Yeah. And so this isn't anything new, but the U.S. needs that breakout year. And I think this is the team that can do it. I mean, I think this lineup is so stacked. And the fact that Nolan is there, Giancarlo Stanton, who has been on board since basically day one. You know, they have guys like Alex Bregman who are going to be coming off the bench. This team is loaded.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If the U.S. does this come in this year and have their semifinal and their final at Dodger Stadium, and they come out with a victory in front of a what would hopefully be a very good home crowd in Dodger Stadium, I think you're going to see a lot more people get on board with it next time around, and especially if those guys come out and play really well. They do become a championship team. They're going to go back and tell all their teammates how much fun it was and how amazing it was to be a part of something like that, and I think it's going to really start to spread like wildfire, and hope that you can continue that kind of momentum. You know, the next one comes around 4 years from now, if there is a next one. I imagine there will be. I have to hope.
I think there will be.
I think so. But you just have to make sure that everybody is able to come out and play their best, or at least the best of their ability, because this does need to be a U.S. dominated event, and it's never been even close to anything like that. It's always been about the first round's always about the upstart team that everyone comes out of nowhere and no one really realizes first. And then it's about blue bloods coming out and finishing out the championship round, which is whether it's Japan or Korea or Cuba, Dominican Republic last time out. Those are the teams you expect to be there along with the U.S., but all of those teams have done pretty well. And the U.S. has been the perennial disappointment. And I think if that changes this year, people see the WBC in a very different light.
The U.S. team this season really is going to need its starting pitching to be better. That's one thing that has hamstrung the United States in years past, and this is a big issue for the U.S. this year, because you have guys, you know, like Marcus Stroman, like Chris Archer, guys that you can rely on somewhat, but you don't have Max Scherzer pulled out because of an injury. You don't have Sonny Gray pulled out because of an insurance issue. Sonny Gray was injured for too long of a stretch last year that he couldn't get insurance coverage for the WBC, which could be an issue going forward for teams and for players. But this team, if they can get good starting pitching and they don't have to use guys in middle relief who are unaccustomed to being in middle relief, They're going to be deadly because they've got Andrew Miller leading the bullpen. The bullpen for the U.S. is better than any bullpen out there.
Yeah.
So that, if you can get your starters into the fifth or sixth inning on this 65-pitch limit early, the tournament gets deeper, the pitch counts grow, then I think you are very well positioned to make a run, because once you get to the final round, if you make it to Dodger Stadium, then you start to manage your pitching staff differently. And I think this team can hang with anybody. There are a lot of predictions that this will be the first time the U.S. wins it. I think the Dominican Republic is still probably the overall strongest team, but this is definitely the best national team that USA Baseball has put together for a WBC. The U.S. really needs that breakout year, and this to me just – and you and I are going together, so they have to be there.
Yeah, they better be. All I got to say is that the – basically the U.S. team is taking a page out of the 2015 Royals and the 2016 Indians.
Yeah.
The if you have to have your starters go shorter in the game to begin things, whether it's a pitch count or not,
right,
then just make that game shorter with a dynamite bullpen, and you can basically end the game in the sixth inning.
This – I mean, man, this team is – I'm so excited to see what this lineup looks like.
They are so jacked.
Oh, it's going to be fun. So the United States will open play on Thursday coming up in Miami. As it's very strange to me. You and I have discussed this, but it's very strange to me that there are no games in Phoenix this year.
Yes.
But they will open up against Colombia. Actually, on Friday. They'll open on Friday against Colombia. Then they take on the Dominican Republic on Saturday and then Canada on Sunday. Those are the four teams in Pool C, which is in Miami. You would think the U.S. and the Dominican will come out of that pool, which means that a very talented Canadian team is kind of on the bubble. Colombia would really need to shine. Shock people to make a run through that round, but this is going to be fun, man. Nolan left the Rockies to join the United States roster, as did Jake McGee. Carlos Gonzalez left. He'll be part of the Venezuelan roster. That team is loaded too, so keep an eye on them. Felix Hernandez has really kind of made it a point that this season he really wants to be the breakout year for Venezuela. They made the Final Four back in 2009 at Dodger Stadium, but they've had some pretty disappointing showings. I think got bounced in the first round in 2013, if I remember right.
Yeah, I believe so.
So, but this is going to be fun, and I'm super pumped to be out there. I fly in on the morning of the first semifinal game on Monday, so you and I will head out with your lovely fiance, and I tweeted at the Dodgers the other day that we would eat our body weight in Dodger dogs, and they responded and said that they need photos and videos of that, so we'll have to do that.
Well, if we have to,
you know, these are the tasks that we take on. Okay, so with that, we're gonna jump into a loaded Ask PDP for this week's edition of the show, which means we have to play the intro song.
Dun, 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 ask PDP. Dun, 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 ask your question. Dun, 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 ask PDP.
Good. Anthony Masterson giving us the best and brightest of the Purple Dinosaur podcast.
Give me more of that.
Ask PDP, Anthony. We're rolling through some good stuff. We already addressed David Dahl. Craig Goldstein responded to our second Ask PDP submission request and said, quote, "Why is David Dahl's back mad at me personally and taking it out on David? I wish we all knew an answer to that."
God, I'm sorry, Craig.
I know. It's awful.
We're all sorry.
But let's go to some of these. Ryan Freemar, our good buddy. Quote, "Greg Holland reportedly threw 91-92 in a simulated game today. Does this mean all hope is lost for the season?"
I think so. Yeah, I think we just pack it in at this point. Yeah.
Why not?
Oh, everyone seemed to be really upset about this on Twitter this morning. I really don't understand. I know it's one of those things that people get mad about and then forget about because it's Twitter and it's a cesspool of horrible, horrible everything.
It's the worst invention in human history.
Basically. It's up there. No, I think the fact that he was rumored to be, 86, 87 during his showcase that he had earlier, I guess last month, and if he's 91, 92 now, this guy hasn't pitched in over a year. He's had Tommy John surgery. It's a long time back for him to get back into real game shape, and the 91, 92 I think is okay for March 6th. Even if he's throwing 91, 92 later in March, I mean, Greg Holland's never a guy who was going to be bumping up at 99, 100 miles an hour. He's a guy with a great split finger. So I want to see if the separation of pitches is still pretty good, or if, you know, it's still kind of coming along, but it's him getting back into game shape at 91-92 on March 6th doesn't bother me right now one bit.
No, me neither. And I think Greg Holland actually said after his first sim game last week that at this stage he's not worried about results. He's not worried about velocity or anything. When you come back from Tommy John surgery, yeah, velocity often comes quicker than command, but you're so focused on figuring out command, how to throw your pitches again. You basically have to retrain your body on how to do all of that stuff. You're not going to be going full out 100% game speed in a sim game on March 5th. So I'm not super worried about it. If we get to March 25th and Greg Holland is still not what you would hope Greg Holland is going to be, then I think to a certain extent, maybe you get a little bit worried about it. But that being said, you know, you didn't give Greg Holland a ton of money, A, and B, you also signed other guys to pitch in late inning situations for that reason, or you acquired other guys, you know, in the case of Jake McGee, to pitch in late inning situations for that reason. Mike Dunn is a guy who can fill that role. Adam Ottavino can fill that role. Jairo Diaz, if he comes back strong, could potentially fill a late inning role. They're not relying on Greg Holland to be, he's not a Aroldis Chapman. They didn't sign him to be the end all be all at the bullpen's back end. You would like that.
I think Bud Black seems to think that he's already the closer. He's already been named the closer. So
I think, you know, they got faith in him. I got faith.
I think so. I mean, listen, if he's still throwing 91-92 in 3 weeks, then you maybe go, well, maybe he's just a guy who throws 91-92 now instead of 94-95, and you move on from there. Just because he doesn't throw as hard doesn't mean he's going to be less effective. It just means he has to be more precise, and we'll see how he gets back into game shape once he gets, you know, a couple more simulated games under his belt. Once he gets back to real game action, we'll see how he looks. But no, this is not something to get upset about right now. It's still so early in spring training. Just, it seems like it's been going on for 3 weeks now because it has. That's how spring training works.
And also, yeah, in spring training, it's, you just have to get fired up about the smallest things because it's baseball and it's news, and you want to explore it because it feels good that you're getting new news from baseball
and you're
after the winter.
For it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm fine with it. Okay, you go.
Let's see.
Actually, I want to bring up the one that I really want to talk about, that I want to get into, which was brought to our attention by Mike Morrison. I had not heard this, but this news came out 3 days ago from Chris Creamer at sportslogos.net, which, if you are a logo and uniform nerd, is a place that you should be visiting on pretty much a daily basis, and I obviously missed this 3 days ago. Quote, after 24 seasons, the only primary logo the Colorado Rockies have ever known is being replaced. The Rockies will be swapping their primary and alternate logos for the 2017 season, getting the bump up to primary status as the black and silver CR logo, which is more recognized as the logo the club has always worn on their ball caps. The Rocky Mountain logo will still be officially used as an alternate logo. It will continue to be worn on the sleeve patch. Per Rockies communications in an email to sportslogos.net, the logo swap was made official on their style guide so that media, opposing teams, and Major League Baseball would be more consistent. The team apparently preferred that the same logo, in this case the CR, would be used across the board rather than some using the CR with some using the baseball mountain. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's like swapping out your 91 Acura Integra for a 91 Honda Civic.
Yeah.
Like, they're both garbage.
Yeah, we've wanted to lead the charge on the rebrand for so long. We've always said keep the purple. That's always what we've said. Keep the purple. You want to keep the mountains in there, fine. Obviously, that's something that is very specific to you as a Colorado Rockies. But, man, I wish they would have just found like some random new logo we could have just thrown out there and been like, all right, this is fine. This is something different at the very least. Yeah. Now it's just rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's, you know, what I very much like about this and I find encouraging is the Rockies, and somebody in the front office seems to have put a lot of thought into the look for this team this year. They changed the color purple to be more consistent across the landscape. Now they swapped logos. I think that's good. In 2020, Under Armour will take over as the official uniform provider of Major League Baseball. I think the Rockies should ride out this perfectly bland and at one time acceptable early 90s logo design through 2019 and then totally blow it all up in 2020. I think you keep the purple because that's your signature and because it has a cool reason behind it. because of the line Purple Mountains Majesties in America the Beautiful, which was written in Colorado, yada, yada. If you didn't know that, now you know. But I think, you know, in 2020, just give us something new. Come on.
Yeah. Please. We could only hope at this point because it's been too long without a rebrand for this team.
Yeah,
so
it's, yeah.
Let's hope.
Okay. All right, go.
All right. This is from Jake Welch. It says, my question is this. Are we past the David Wells / Brian Bohannon era when round men could be called, quote, athletes, end quote?
I think as long as Bartolo Colon lives and breathes, no. But I think that we are also at the verge of that being the case.
Well, I also think that we're just at a point where nutrition and diet, exercise, all those things that goes into being a ball player, I think you're so much more in tune with what you put into your body at all times that, you know, people are going to be more competitive because they're the players you're playing against trying to vie for those major league spots. They're all going to be working hard and working all off season and, you know, getting their diets right. And I think that's just kind of where we are right now to be professional athletes. I mean, what Tom Brady doesn't like touch like a drop of alcohol or any sugars or anything during the football season. I know he's a psychopath, but that's kind of what those professional athletes do. They're so aware now because also they have to know what they put in their body because, you know, so many things can trip off a drug test or something along those lines where they need to make sure that everything that goes in there is kosher. It's usually the only 100% perfect way to do that is run all your meals and what you intake through your training staff for your organization. And so they're going to make sure that you're eating healthy and you're working out, you're doing all the right things for your body. And when you do that, it's hard to be a big fat guy and play and still be, well, fat, I guess. But when you're exercising and putting all the, and eating right, it's hard to be fat, I guess. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's, of course, there's still going to be guys who are heftier, and baseball is the one sport where being a hefty guy is, and not necessarily just a strong guy, you're going to have your best shot to make a professional living. Not like you're an offensive lineman or something like that in football. But yeah, thank God for guys like Bartolo Colon and, of course, Brian Bohannon, David Wells. I mean, Jake actually pointed out in a previous tweet that Brian Bohannon played for 14 years.
Yeah. And now, no joke, sells cars at a dealership in North Texas.
Yeah.
You can find his picture on the old website. It's amazing.
Looks great.
Okay, let's continue along. We got a couple different variations of this question, which is in regards to the number five spot in the Rockies rotation. And I will read Scott Anderson's phrasing of it, which is, quote, I feel that someone needs to grab the fifth starter job by the throat. It can't just be a guy. Your thoughts?
Like someone needs to come in and actually play well in spring training?
Somebody's got
to
seize that spot. Yeah, exactly. Like it can't just be like, oh, we'll love these three young guys. I guess it'll default to Jeff Hoffman because he's the guy potentially with the highest ceiling. Like somebody among the dudes competing for that spot right now really needs to blow up. And apparently that group could include Chris Russin at this stage from what we've heard.
No.
But it would seem to be a battle between Jeff Hoffman and Herman Marquez.
We have seen the Chris Russin game. He is a very, very adequate guy to have in your bullpen as a swingman. He's actually decently effective as a reliever. He is not a guy that needs to or can face a lineup two, three times in a game. One time through, he's a very, very good at keeping people off balance, especially if they faced a harder thrower. But no, he is fine as a 25th man on that roster in that bullpen. He is not fine to be a starter in the big leagues.
Yeah.
Let it be between Jeff Hoffman. Let it be between Herman Marquez, Antonio Senzatella, maybe, if he's going to be healthy. But right now, I think it's between Marquez and Hoffman. And I think the competition is very, very open for that spot.
I think Kyle Freeland is definitely in it, too.
Yeah, Freeland has started out there. But I think whoever pitches the best in spring training will be awarded with that fifth spot. I think Jeff Hoffman is the leader in the clubhouse, but I don't think he has such a stranglehold on that spot that they would be so averse to sending him down to AAA to begin the season. I don't think that at all. I think if they think he needs more seasoning, I don't think they would think twice about going back down to AAA with Jeff Hoffman.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, the Rockies as an organization would like to see Jeff Hoffman take that last step. And from what it seems like, he has very much adapted to what he learned his first time through last season. I think he studied a lot of what didn't work for him much like we saw with John Gray at the end of 2015, coming into 2016, realizing, okay, what worked for me at AA and AAA isn't going to work for me necessarily all the time in the major leagues. I have to be able to adapt. So I think Jeff Hovland did that. Germán Márquez is just a quiet guy who succeeds where he goes. I mean, that's been his MO throughout his career. And Kyle Freeland is, I think, still in need of the last things that you polish off in finishing school, which is AAA. But he's got the talent level to be right in that mix, and he had a really good outing his last time out. I wouldn't be shocked if he won it either. So I agree with the assessment that somebody needs. It can't just be a default thing among those three guys or more if there is a surprise, a dark horse candidate for that spot. But I think right now I'm still pretty confident if I'm the guys overseeing that staff and overseeing those players specifically, that one of them is going to have the type of spring that makes you look at him and go, that's the guy.
Right. All right. Moving on from our good pal, Tom Norwood. What's the best lunch spot for a weekday pregame lunch? He'll be in Denver at the end of April, and it's been 5 years since his last game there.
In terms of proximity to Coors Field, I think the leader for me is Mexico City,
okay,
which is the taco place, which is, I think, a 4-block walk from Coors Field. That would be my choice. But there's so, you know, like now you can go to places at Union Station, too. Like if you want to be a trendy person who hangs out at Union Station, there are places there. Like there's just so every time you go to Lodo, there are 55 new things for you to try.
Yeah.
But I would stick with something old school. I would go with Mexico City.
I never miss biker gyms.
Yeah, that's a good spot. We went there the last time you were in town.
Yeah, Biker Gyms is my spot. It's, what, 2 blocks, 3 blocks from Coors Field on the first base side. And now it's got the restaurant there. I never miss Biker Gyms once when I'm at Coors Field.
It's a good choice.
Yeah.
And they also have a concession stand now on the third level of Coors Field.
They do, yeah, which is awesome. Party deck.
Okay, let's grab another one. This is one of my favorites today from Andrew Lacey, one of our loyal pals. Quote, can we write off Israel because Scott Burcham is a Coors Field product?
So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Coors.
I mean,
it's the Coors of Korea.
Yeah.
The Gochuk Sky Dome, the Coors of Korea. Why not?
Sure.
Doesn't actually count because a Rockies prospect did it.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. So, congratulations to South Korea for winning the opener of
WBC. By default.
By default. Because Coors stats don't matter, especially guys who have heard of Coors Field.
Exactly. It doesn't count.
Yeah.
Okay. That's one of my faves.
All right. Where'd we go? This is from our pal Mike Flick at Flickerbach. Which minor league player on the cusp of MLB are you most excited about seeing this year with the Rockies?
In terms of guys that we haven't seen at the major league level, for me, it's Kyle Freeland, because the storyline is so cool with him being a Denver kid, went to Thomas Jefferson High School. He would really be the first hometown guy developed by this team to, you hope, make a pretty significant impact on the major league organization. Grew up a Rockies fan, going to Rockies games his whole life. I think that would be really cool. And for the guys that we haven't yet seen at the major league level, he's mine.
And there's a really intriguing guy. We know we have a lot of our easy ones, our Senzatellas, our Marquezes, you know, Ryan McMahon, see how he bounced back, Forrest Wall. There's one guy in camp right now who is really opening a lot of eyes early on in camp, and who knows where he'll be, more than likely in AAA at the beginning of the year. Pat Valaika. Pat Valaika is a very, very interesting guy. I mean, he made his big league debut last year, did hit a home run in 13 games, but UCLA product, shortstop. Yeah, he's been with the Rockies organization since 2013. He's kind of a tweener. He's a pretty solid defender. He can kind of handle the bat pretty well. I want to see him right now kind of take the next step and maybe become that all-encompassing utility infielder that can play any number of positions and sit as that last spot on the bench. Because last year, 14 homers, 80 driven in, did steal 10 bags for Hartford and Albuquerque. Most of his time was spent in Hartford last year, only 28 games in the queue before getting his call up to the big leagues. He's already got, I think, 3 home runs already this spring training. And obviously you take that with a massive grain of salt, of course, but the fact that he's early in camp impressing when he's already made his big league debut, he knew that all offseason that he's going to have at least a more decent chance to come in and maybe snag that last spot over guys like Alexi Amarista, Christian Adames, whomever. If he's going to be able to get that spot on that last part of the bench, I think he's coming in, and he clearly had a regimen this offseason that was going to get him prepared to go right off the bat. And I think he's coming through so far. So we'll see how the next 3 weeks shakes out for Pat Valaika, but he's somebody to watch. It's a very interesting guy, nonetheless.
I like that answer. That's a good one. There are, you hear so much about the top level guys in the system that, you know, a lot of systems are made or broken by mid-level guys who come out of nowhere to surprise you. I mean, especially with organizations that don't necessarily have very deep systems, you really need those breakout performances from those types of guys. The Rockies have a luxury of having a top 10 system in every ranking so far, so you are already relying on your elite prospects to be major league contributors, and anything you get on top of that is kind of gravy, and I think Pat Valaika is a really good example of that.
Yeah.
This is a good one from Will, who has submitted this over our last two Ask PDPs. We didn't get to any Ask PDPs last episode. But what is your opinion on the disabled list time changing to 10 days? His follow-up question is, did minor league disabled list rules change? And then a third question, where will Tapia start, Albuquerque or Denver? The minor league disabled list did not change, but the minor league DL is only 7 days and is already very strangely fluid. Basically, you can put a guy on the minor league DL and just kind of leave him there indefinitely as a paper move if you want to, if you need to bring somebody else up or bring somebody down or whatever it is. Minor league DL is not nearly as stringent as the major league disabled list, but your thoughts on the 10-day DL?
I mean, I think it's good now because it will help teams with kind of more nagging injuries that might, you know, a guy might sit out for a week and be ready to go, and then they still have to worry about the guy sitting out for 7 more days before he comes back while they're trying to juggle, you know, a guy who maybe isn't ready or shouldn't be in the big leagues when they, you know, because they have to wait out the requisite 15 days. I mean, I have no problem with it because we've seen the 15-day DLs, whatever, they end up being more than that for the most part anyway. So it's not like usually they're waiting for, you know, day 15 to get them off the DL and get them back on the roster. Generally, a 15-day DL stint can be as long as, you know, a month and a half at some point. So I think it's fine. I think it'll help teams with the roster management, maybe not have to shuttle too many guys up and down between AAA and the big leagues, maybe save some guys options if they need to. I think it's a nice little move for everybody involved.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's good for something like a blister. You know, for guys that have to go on disabled list for random, not significant injuries, I think it's a really good improvement. And again, it's not going to harm anybody by making it shorter, because if guys need to stay on the disabled list longer, they can. So I think it's a smart move. You know, it doesn't seem to really affect anything too huge. As for the follow-up question, I think Tapia will be in Albuquerque to start the year. I think that's where he should be. I think there are still – we saw a lot of really good, encouraging things from Tapia at the end of the season. But I think him being able to go through another stretch of pitchers trying to adjust to him, even if it isn't at the major league level, I think one more round of that would be good for his development. Still young. Yeah. He's a guy who I think can be a very good major league contributor. But I think he'll be in Albuquerque to start the year.
I think so, too. And that is unless, you know, the injury to David Dahl is more serious than we thought. We mentioned this earlier, but if Patterson or Tapia grabs that fourth outfielder spot, then that. But I think, yeah, Tapia will be in AAA, I would guess. Here's one
that
from
also.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that also kind of covers a question from Dennis, who submitted one. Would you rather have a not ready Tapia or a never walks Parra if Dahl isn't ready on day one? You know, I think we're still in agreement. You can't believe you're saying it really after 2016, but I think we're still in agreement that it's Gerardo Parra.
Well, I think that Gerardo Parra is going to win the MVP this year. Just FYI.
The Gerardo Parra MVP.
I think he's
award.
Got it in the bag. There's one from Stephen A. I'm not even going to try to – not Stephen A. Smith. Stephen A. Krodz. It's literally five –
It's a lot of consonants.
It's five consonants in a row.
Yeah. Krzyzewski.
Exactly. So what is the outlook for local, for me, being in Buffalo, kid Tom Murphy this year?
I think by mid-May – Tom Murphy is your clear-cut number one. And I think this is also a segment that we could be playing back in July and saying to ourselves, why did we doubt Tony Walters as a major league starting catcher?
Right.
It's not doubting Tony Walters. I just think that what Tony Walters is defensively is a tremendous asset. And while Tom Murphy may not be that level of a defensive catcher, he's a big weapon as an offensive catcher, and I think he is very much dependable enough as a defensive catcher to be a major league regular. I don't think right out of the gate he'll be that guy, but I think eventually he's going to push himself into that number one job, and he'll get, you know, two-thirds of every series.
Yeah, I think you could see early in the year a 4-3 split between starts between Murphy and Walters. So Murphy would take four starts in a week, Walters take three, and then you hope that Murphy would improve his calling behind the plate, improve his footwork, improve his arm back there, try to, you know, enhance the defensive aspects of his game while also contributing offensively, because we know that Tom Murphy has the capability, if given enough at bats, to really put up some phenomenal numbers from a usually, you know, not very hitting rich spot in the lineup. So if you can get a catcher that can hit you 20 to 30 home runs, and even if his average hovers around 260, 270, that is totally fine if he can learn how to catch and throw a little bit better. So I think Murphy is the guy that they want to see going forward as the man behind home plate. And Walters is a very decent backup, especially defensively, if Murphy can't handle it initially.
Okay. I think we have just about exhausted Ask PDP for this week, but I do want to bring in a real world one. This is a question that came up in my life via somebody who I will leave out of actually naming on the podcast, because I don't want this person to engender the wrath of just how absurd what I'm going to say to you is.
Good God, man. What's going on?
But it's a food question, and it wasn't Craig Goldstein, which is
weird.
Stunning.
Yeah.
But okay, when you take two slices of bread and you put them in the toaster, when they come out of the toaster, do you consider toast to be a different thing than bread? To me, toast is bread that has had a quality changed, but this human being considers toast and bread to be two separate foodstuffs.
I mean,
this is like a Catholic sacrament to me.
Yeah, it's, I mean, bizarre. It's the same food. You just altered it.
Right.
Yeah. It's not like you added new ingredients. It's not like you manipulated the DNA of the bread. You just burned it.
Yeah.
You know, you put fire on it.
Right.
Does duck flambé, is that different than duck? No.
Yeah.
It's still duck flambé.
Exactly. But this is the thing that blows my mind. So I put this on Twitter as a poll, because I've just turned into one of those annoying people on Twitter who yesterday did a quote tweet, Nick Stellini wanted to snap my neck, and I did a poll for this a few weeks ago, but I said, quote, having a debate I've never even considered before, is toast, once toasted, still bread? 59 people voted. 10 people said no! Who are you people? What is wrong with you?
Yeah, show yourselves, you cowards.
You lunatics. This is like a mental illness. I don't get it. I don't get it. It blows my mind.
You want to talk about alternative facts, am I right?
Timely. Hey-o.
Political humor.
I don't get it. If you are a person who believes that toast is no longer bread, you can email us, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us. I'm at Tyler Mon. Anthony is at Master Tones. And explain yourself, because this makes no sense to me. Zero sense.
I would love to find out why they think so.
So weird. So weird. So anyway, I guess that'll do it. Will that do it?
Yeah, I think so.
That do it. I'm going to see you soon, buddy.
Hey.
What do you got going on?
Probably get one more episode then before we get out of here.
Yeah,
we'll probably do one while we're both out here, of course.
I am headed to spring training on Sunday. So I'll try to grab some dudes. That's a creepy way to phrase it. Try to grab some interviews.
That's a nice
with
little
dudes.
Saturday night for you.
Oh, hi-o. We'll talk with Rocky's guys and get a chance to throw some of those onto the podcast. And, you know, hopefully there will be some positive news for guys being healthy and being in action and all that kind of stuff, rather than this, us having to feel like already the world is turning against us. But, you know, the world's been turning against us for a while now.
For a long time now. I'm hoping to get out the weekend before you come out to LA.
Nice.
Because obviously, Long Beach State conference tournament starts on Thursday, so who knows how that will go. And my only time I could probably get to spring training this year is that weekend. So what, the 17th or 18th and 19th or whatever it ends up being. So hopefully you get out there for that. If not, I will just have to settle for the WBC semifinals and championship game, which I guess is a solid backup plan.
I like it. It's going to be fun. We're going to have a ton of fun. Yeah, I'll be getting there the morning of the 20th and leaving the 23rd. So 3 days of Anthony and I hanging out in the same place and watching baseball. Drinking booze and hopefully watching. We predicted on the account yesterday Nolan's going to hit a walk-off grand slam to win the WBC crown. So you're welcome, world.
Yeah, how about that, huh?
It's going to be great. All right, you can continue to submit fun stuff like your Ask PDP questions on Twitter or on the old email address. And you can also get in touch with the show about anything else that strikes your fancy. You can also find us on iTunes and the Stitcher app and wherever else you get your podcasts, and give us a rating and a review and a subscription if you are so kind. And Humble Monster, we are in the process right now of designing some shirts for the 2017 season. Very excited about one of them. And we'll have some other ideas in the hopper that we'll be rolling out here pretty soon. So start saving your bucks, because the third annual Purple Dinosaur Podcast t-shirt rollout will be coming your way soon.
It's going to be fun, guys. You're going to like it.
It's going to be a good one. All right. I guess that's it.
All right.
Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.